The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another Kiefer and Curry show. Here's Kip Kiefer, executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. Of course, man does TV, radio. We have a little television show called The Starting Lineup, ABC 3340, which butted right up against that Alabama victory. Win by 24, cover the spread against the Wisconsin Badgers this past weekend. We'll have more college football coming up on Saturday. And, of course, we're doing these things on Tuesday nights while we're down in the Soho area of Homewood. We'll be doing that again coming up tomorrow night. I'll let Kip give those details, but we've invited a special guest to join our show here today.
Yeah, let me. We've had to make a change. So if you heard it on the show Saturday, the gathering is actually going to be on Wednesday night this week, for reasons that there was a conflict at the Soho Social. So make note, I'm going to get it out on all of our outlets. But we will have the happy hour party this week from 5 to 7:30 at Soho Social on Wednesday night of this week. So everybody, come on out. If you ever want to get on TV, here's your chance, because we had a segment on The Starting Lineup this week from Social Taco last week. We're going to talk football with all of our fans and have a great time. And then next week, you can already put it on your calendar. It is going to be back on Tuesday. But next Tuesday, we will be at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino for our first mega party. And that's something you need to put on your calendar. Be there. I think we're going to start about 5:30 next Tuesday at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino.
I feel a jackpot coming. I feel Larry Langford jackpot coming. I feel Larry Langford jackpot.
There you go.
Yeah,
we're going to have a lot of free play to give out to
you. I know a guy that does radio and he does a lot of television. And if he would win some jackpots, he would certainly talk well about the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. I'm just saying.
I know a guy. Let me see. I can't think. Jim Dunaway?
Yeah. He gonna talk about you like I would, baby. He don't love you like I do, man. All right, so who's this John Hartnell guy at the bottom of my screen? What's this guy doing? What's
John Hartnell? I met him, I think, last year at some kind of gathering we had, and was introduced to him. he expressed at that time that he had some interest in exploring the murky forest of sports broadcasting, which you and I have wandered into and are still wandering around.
Yes, we are. Yep.
So I said, you know, we can find a clearing and get you in at some point. And it's taken too long to get that done, but I told John, as I ran into him last week at Social Taco, that let's make it happen. I'm with Tony Curry on the network now. I'm not a one horse deal. I have the sophisticated TKR network.
Yes, you do.
This is the best time for John to get in and make his Birmingham debut, and let's talk a little football, Tony.
John, this is going to be the biggest platform that you'll be on. It's on Tony Curry Radio. It's 100,000 people have downloaded our app. So you're talking to just a crap ton of people. And of course, I could not do it without Kip Kiefer, who also has the Need to Know show, which, by the way, was very inflamed and wonderful this past week. So make sure you check out that show as well. John, I see you got the Crimson Tide. Let's start right there. Crimson Tide, they got the victory. We all had Alabama minus the 20. I guess it was 20 and a half by the time I kick off. But what did you see from your Crimson Tide this past week? Were you happy to see how they performed?
I was glad to see much effort coming off the last game. That's against University of Louisiana Monroe. Wanted to see the effort in that game, and now we'll step up in competition and the Wisconsin team that did have a really good defense. I felt like Wisconsin really did have a good defense. I know they really haven't played anybody yet this year, but their first two games are in the top five statistically defensively, and especially on the front seven. I felt like they had a strong front seven. Wisconsin did, which caused a little trouble in our run game, but during the game, kind of noticed how Ty Simpson kind of took control of the game and the passing aspect of it. And that was due to play calling and checks at the line of scrimmage. You could see him check off when there was eight in the box, and he took took advantage of that by throwing the ball down the field. So
kind of hard to
like the way they played.
Yeah, kind of hard to improve on imperfection and what he was in the game before that when he went 17-17. But Simpson obviously is coming into his own, and I love the fact that he had a team that obviously a lot of people thought they were going to beat. Now it gets a little more difficult as they got the bye week, and then they go between the hedges against a 3-0 Georgia squad. And Kip and I have kept saying this, it was a down year for Georgia. They won the damn SEC. I mean,
people say last year was a disappointment. Yeah,
and what you want to say? I had a minus four on K4 wins, and of course that was a loser by a point. But to get that victory in Tennessee, the ninth in a row for Georgia, was quite stout. And the way to do it, I thought was amazing too. Giving up a lot of points early in that game. It doesn't matter what Tennessee does. Georgia's always got their number, don't they, John?
Go ahead, John.
I'm sorry.
No,
I was just going to say that game did surprise me some. I had Tennessee winning, to be honest with you. I thought like this would be their year to finally get them. They're at home. You know, they had game day there. They had everything to set up for it. And I do like Joey Aguilar. I think he's a better fit for that offense than Nico was. He completes more balls downfield. He's more accurate downfield than Nico was. Kind of like the Hendon Hooker was for a few years ago. I just thought maybe this would be the year to get Kirby. Kind of Gunnar Stockton's first true road game in the SEC.
He looked good too, by the way. A couple touchdowns, zero picks. He protected the ball. Gunnar Stockton kind of had his coming out party too a little bit. And they actually got up to the point where they were up by 8 points in that particular ball game. But no, I don't think anyone saw, 85 points coming between those two teams.
You know, guys, here's the thing about Tennessee. Josh Heupel is, in terms of scheme and game plan, is as good as it gets. He knew that Kirby Smart was from the Saban ilk, where he wants to put his corners responsible for on outside coverage, one-on-one. That's a lot to ask of experienced guys, but they had 2 5-stars starting at either corner for Georgia, making their first ever SEC road start. These guys played some last year, but this is the first time they were the guy. And Heupel took advantage of that because Kirby Smart, if you really watched a lot of Georgia football, he has a tendency to be kind of old school in the fact that they want to stop the run first. And Tennessee's been a run first team. Everybody thinks Heupel's just to air it out. But last year with Dylan Sampson, they pounded the rock. They ran the ball, 75% of the time. So Kirby always has that inclination to stop the run. And at Georgia early in the game were creeping their safeties up, and you talk about leaving these corners on an island, and Tennessee hit some big plays right off the bat by flinging it all over the place. They had no intention to run the ball. So the game was fascinating from a strategy standpoint. I texted my partner, Terry Quillian, in the first quarter. She's a Georgia fanatic. She was about to jump out the window on the third floor. And I said, don't do that yet, because all you need to do is manufacture a good drive for your offense here, because they'll make the adjustment now. And sure enough, that's when they did it. Georgia went 3-and-out after they fell behind 14-7. Tennessee came right back on the field, bombed them again for another long touchdown. But then the next drive, Georgia actually controlled the ball for 6 or 7 minutes. And by the time that defense came back on the field, they were in deep safeties. They had deep help. And it just changed the game, because then Tennessee started to run the ball, but the Georgia front stuffed the run all day, with the exception of one of their backs had a 27-yard run in the fourth quarter that set up another score. But it was really a fascinating game from a strategy standpoint. And it really kind of illustrated how much of a chess game the whole coaching profession is, of adjustments and other adjustments back. And I just found the game fascinating. But the downside of Josh Heupel is that too many times, especially against Georgia, but in other games too, Josh Heupel has managed to snatch victory, or I should say defeat, from the jaws of victory too many times. As an in-game coach, he makes a lot of questionable decisions, like getting a turnover in the fourth quarter. They were up five at the time. They were only 31 yards from putting the dagger in Georgia and ending the game. But instead of being aggressive, they basically ran the ball up the middle three times, didn't get any yardage, kicked a field goal to go up eight. But as we know, eight is a one score and a 2-point conversion away from being a tie. And that's just what Georgia got done on a fourth down play. Gunnar Stockton really coming of age. What a play on fourth down to just basically drop that ball on the lap of Humphreys while he was sliding on the ground. That was one of the phenomenal plays of the year so far.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Go ahead, John.
That was probably the pass and catch of the year by far. And I do believe that was the biggest drive of the game when it was a third and eight and he just runs it up the middle instead of trying to keep that drive going. That's when I really felt like if Tennessee could go in and punch it in for a game touchdown, over. They could pick the game was over, I felt like.
Yeah, it was the seventh game in a row, too, by the way, which we brought up. We also had this on K4 Wins. We had the over 24.5 points in the first half. But you don't think of these two teams as high-scoring teams, but it was a seventh consecutive game that went over in the first half.
When they play each other.
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, Tennessee came out with 17 points in a heartbeat, and it's like, boom, that over was in there. And, again, the final 44-41. You talked about Gunnar Stockton, 304 through air, 23-31, and then Joey Aguilar. I think both guys kind of came into their own on a really big stage, which was really good. I think we got two really good quarterbacks here. They're going to be playing well. We got another team a little south of us. I know that you're not wearing the proper shirt for the Auburn Tigers, but I guess it's worthy to start bringing up Hugh Freeze's 3-0 Auburn Tigers. They've got an eerie, interesting twist this weekend, Kip, as they head to Oklahoma, catching 6.5. Can the Auburn Tigers get up to a 4-0 start?
I'm going to believe it when I see it. What a storyline in this game. Jackson Arnold going back to Oklahoma just in the fourth week of the season where he was so ballyhooed. And it's kind of like the sequel to the Nico story. Oh, by the way, Nico is now 0-3 for UCLA. And UCLA fired their coach yesterday, Deshaun Foster, in week three of the season. Nothing like pulling the panic cord right off the bat. You know, they've lost back-to-back games now against UNLV, and at home they got blown out by New Mexico on Friday night.
15-point dog. We had that too.
About a low point in the program, and Nico is not performing any miracles at UCLA. But what about this Jackson Arnold going back to Norman, where he had a very rough time last year, was benched after just three games, despite being the celebrated five-star that was going to lead the Sooners back into prominence. I find that storyline fascinating. And let's not get too out of control, because I've been saying it all year. It's not this time of year who you it's not how you play, it's who you play. And Auburn's last two home wins, I don't think it was the cream of the crop in terms of competition. So now with back-to-back games at Oklahoma and Texas A&M, we'll see what they're made of. The Baylor win on the road was a big get for them. Hugh Freeze, almost a must-win game in my opinion. But now, especially Texas A&M, making me right early in the year of saying, watch out for this team. They're kind of a sleeping giant nobody's talking about. They had so much personnel back. And Marcel Reed, another quarterback that proved himself. You even heard Case, Tony, on our podcast. Like, say, I'm not really a Marcel Reed guy. I wonder if he is now.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Listen, the Auburn Tigers can somehow pull up a victory. Again, they're only 6.5 point. They're getting some respect. They're 22nd now in the country as a 6.5 point dog against the Oklahoma squadron, which, by the way, just knocked the living bejeebers out of my Temple Owls, who I had winning outright, catching 24. I hope everyone realized that was a little bit of a hook and a wink there. I hope you took that. But they just shut down Temple's offense. So he was really good. This Simon kid had 9 touchdowns and 0 picks, and he just couldn't do anything. But yeah, if the Auburn Tigers can get a victory here, there's a reason why all of a sudden the Auburn Tiger fans, but you're talking about a schedule where they go to Oklahoma, then number 10 A&M, then Georgia, and then Missouri. Ouch. Four top 25 teams in a row. Could they be taken over for the Alabama Crimson Tide's fury of fandom, if you will, John? All of a sudden, more people talk about the Auburn Tigers than Alabama Crimson Tide? No?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think Oklahoma is going to take care of business. Not saying that just because I'm an Alabama fan, but I'm really big on Oklahoma this year. I have a that's my dark horse to kind of win the SEC this year. If John Mathier and that offense can keep continue to get better, kind of the same way that like how Vanderbilt bringing the head coach to run the offense with Diego Pavia, but then you bring the offensive coordinator in, let him do his thing on that side of the ball. Then you got one of the best defensive minds, Brent Venables, running his defense. And so far this year, that defense has shut everybody down. I mean, besides that Michigan game, they gave up one big run, and a muff punt was the only way that Michigan even got anything on offense.
And it was Justin Haynes, of course, who left Alabama to go to Michigan. So
Justin Haynes, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, unfortunately. But we could have used him. So I'm running the ball probably this past weekend, especially with Jam Miller out. But hopefully he'll be back in 2 weeks.
Well, I think that's a big key.
Looks very good to me.
I think that's a big key, John, if Jam Miller does come back, because yesterday, and you know, let's face it, Wisconsin's a middling to lower third team in the Big Ten, but you absolutely nailed it to start the show here. They have a credible defense, and particularly the front seven, very, very solid. When somebody was talking to me this weekend about Alabama's assessment and talking about Ty Simpson having another great game, I said I think as an Alabama fans need to embrace that game from the standpoint that their offensive line held up very well against a really good front seven of Wisconsin. That's the best thing to take out of the game. But from a running the ball standpoint, and of course Wisconsin was part responsible for this because they were huge up front. I mean, no wonder they didn't get any pass rush. Those guys were like boulders. They really couldn't move, but they were massive. I think Alabama's offensive line acquitted itself well, which is good, because the last 2 years they were expected to be good. And let's face it, the offensive line during Jalen Milroe's career, not very good. They got him sacked 52 times two years ago. And everybody said, well, they're going to be good last year because they have so much experience. And I said, well, they have experience with getting their quarterback killed every play. So this looks like a better, more cohesive unit. So I look forward to that. But from the standpoint, we still don't. I think the jury's still out on the Alabama defense. I don't think Louisiana Monroe and the pathetic Wisconsin offense was a good measuring stick. They're going to be tested in Athens. We're going to find out what they're made of. I think that's the key to the game. And John and Tony, I wonder if you guys agree. Georgia, I know Alabama's defense is better than Tennessee's, but Georgia had a lot of success against them. But Georgia's also, and this is a big factor looking ahead 2 weeks, and it's hard not to do that. In the Kirby Smart era, Alabama's played Georgia 5 or 6 times and beaten them all but the once, which, of course, was the national championship game. But that being noted, in the Kirby Smart era, Alabama has not been to Athens. They've been to Atlanta 3 times for the SEC championship and a national championship game. This is the first time they've been to Athens since the infamous blackout game years ago in the Nick Saban era. So this is a true road game at Georgia. I think this is shaping up as game of the year. I was at the game last year in Tuscaloosa, but this Athens showdown is going to be something, and we'll see what the Alabama defense is made of, because I'm still not sure Florida State really pushed them around.
Early line on that game is the Georgia Bulldogs -4.5.
Wow.
Like 2 weeks out, which, I mean, obviously can change a lot between now and then. It should be very, very interesting. It's another game I want to look at, too. And we got John Hartival, who's a big fan of the show and, of course, a big friend of the starting lineup and also, of course, of Kiefer and Curry here. Ole Miss, Austin Simmons, not looking like the Austin Simmons I thought I was going to see going into the season. 4 touchdowns and 4 picks for the Ole Miss Rebels. They're only giving up 12.5 to the Green Wave of Tulane. They are undefeated. But do you think, John, this is the way Lane Kiffin thought he'd see his old Rebels squad be playing this early in the season?
I mean, I think maybe they're just saying that because of the quarterback, but I like their backup quarterback at some point at Ole Miss that came in and played against Arkansas. I mean,
Trinidad Shambliss. Is there a better name in college football?
Yeah, that's great.
Exactly. I mean, he's just like a football player to me. I mean, he's not like maybe a pure passer as Austin Simmons, but he's just like a guy that just plays football. I mean, he just goes out there, he'll run it, he'll throw it. He's a big guy. He can take a hit. I mean, he's played football. He's got experience, and it seems like he's been waiting to play on this level. I mean, granted, Arkansas's defense might not be the best, but it's an SEC defense, first game going against, and put up 41 points in the game. I think Lane Kiffin, he'll stick to the run compared to in the past years, and he might want to throw. But if he has to run it, 19 times, he'll run it probably 19 times in a row. I mean, whether quarterback run or running with the running backs or receivers coming on a jet sweep, some kind of way to involve a run and play, he'll run it. I mean, he's not afraid to do that anymore. It showed at the end of the Kentucky game how he kind of just ran it down their throat.
Now, Kwon Lacy's having a nice season this year. And if you mentioned the fact he's averaging almost 5 yards per carry, he's got 5 touchdowns on the season. I just, you expect not to see a team of old Mrs. caliber, particularly a lot of people having a little check mark by them this year, only giving up a dozen to Tulane. But then again, a lot of people, Kip, were calling Tulane perhaps one of those group of five schools to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
well, maybe. I mean, Auburn fans need to feel good if Tulane's legit. Tulane went to South Alabama 2 weeks ago. The final score of that game was 33-31. Tulane pulled it out. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Auburn win over South Alabama was a little bit better than it appears. I do want to say Pete Golding, our cohort, the legend's favorite coach, who he basically ran out of Alabama with his tirades for about 2 years. He even claims to have driven Pete Golding to the border and tell him to get out at the Mississippi border and go to Oxford. Pete Golding became the highest paid assistant coach in the SEC in the offseason, $2.25 million. If you watch that game Saturday night, I'm not so sure Ole Miss is getting their money's worth. They could not stop Talon Green and the Arkansas offense. They were scoring at will against the Ole Miss defense, who was really solid last year. But they've had a lot of new personnel, and right now the Ole Miss defense to me looks horrendous.
I agree with you. They're giving up a ton of points. They look very, very porous. I cannot believe we're going into week four and we could get rid of both Clemson and Notre Dame in the same breath for the college playoffs. That's unbelievable. Clemson no longer even in the top 25. They lose this weekend to Georgia Tech. Everyone was loving Georgia Tech. It was only a 3-point line. How could a team that was preseason number 4 only be catching or giving a 3 points on the road to Georgia Tech? Now you know why. And it's because King, of course, got it done. But Clemson, they are receiving some votes, but they're giving up 17.5. And there's Notre Dame sitting 0-2, but still 24th in the country.
Which, there's some analyst somewhere who called that. Mm-hmm. I think it's KK. What's that guy's name?
it is early in the season. They're going to be giving up 26 to the Boilermakers of Purdue this weekend, but it is time for Coach Free to get right against the Purdue Boilermakers. But man, you're really looking at opportunity here, and I don't think Notre Dame loses this weekend. But my son was sitting there going, look out against Syracuse. I'm like, seriously now? And he's like, listen, it's only a 17-point game. This may be the biggest rub out I've ever seen in college football if Dabo Swinney doesn't get, I'm not talking about a win, but a convincing win this weekend.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of think Notre Dame, they're kind of put themselves, they're out of it in a way. I mean, that's why they need to join a conference. I mean, they can afford maybe one loss, but losing to Miami, Notre Dame, unless USC has a good record at the end of the year, they're not going to play another ranked team. And then
they've got that sliver, and it's a spot just for Notre Dame. So they have the independent slot. So if they went out, they're getting in, they will get in, but they can't afford to lose another for sure.
No, they can't afford another loss, but it takes away that large. And it's just, I mean, it's going to be hard for me to see the committee wanting to put them in a way, in some way.
Yeah.
With that.
And again, we go back to Prodigy. We look at, the past as well as Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's, it's always better when Notre Dame's playing good football. We know that. That should be interesting. Any shot that my Blazers have against the Tennessee Volunteers? Is there any chance that the Tennessee Volunteers are banged up enough this weekend that maybe they just rest like all 115 guys and just say, hey, we're going to put out the third squad and let UAB come in here and get a couple early? It's line's only 40. I thought, wow. I mean, UTEP was 41 this past week, and they got inside the number against Texas.
Yeah, maybe
my Blazers
Texas
have
stinks. Another team that I called was going to be a bust.
And my Blazers are 2-1. They were up 11 at one point against Akron. They end up winning by 3. But I was going to make that ride up there. But the damn seats at Neyland Stadium are too small for my big ass. So I think I'm just going to keep it at home, watch it on TV.
Well, that's how they can pack 115,000 in there. They make you sit in half a seat.
They did not add anything to the stadium when they added those 20,000 seats. They just made the seats smaller. And you can't do that in Tennessee because people up there have big asses. I'm just saying.
Yeah, to answer your question, I don't know what John thinks, but we'll find out. But UAB beating Tennessee, not going to happen. I'm sorry. UAB's defense, if Tennessee is even at 20% efficiency, how they were against Georgia, they're going to put up 55 points in that game.
And since we're just slamming, because this is a bad weekend for me. Not only did I not do well on my picks, but the teams I had like in my futures bets, and thank goodness I didn't play the over 7.5 in South Carolina over under for their wins, because they did not look this good. I had them this weekend -3 at home. They're finally feeling it. They're playing Beamer ball, looking great, and now they're catching. Did I see this line right? This is unbelievable. They're catching 13.5 on the road against Missouri. Wow. I didn't think Missouri was 13 points better than anybody over South Carolina. No. This could be a blow. I mean, they're begging me to take South Carolina plus the 14, which means, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have to start hedging the bets for 4 weeks into the season, man. I'm going to have to start boohooing on my South Carolina Gamecocks. They are the Cocks for sure.
John, what do you think about that Vanderbilt-South Carolina game? And has anybody done a better job completely resurrecting a program than Clark Lea?
Wow.
I mean, nobody has. I mean, what he's done at Vanderbilt is incredible, to be honest with you. I mean, what Diego Pavia is doing this year, I mean, he looks so much better as a passer. But he's just – I categorize him as like a football player. I mean, he's downfield – making blocks downfield for guys. And, you know, that offensive line is one of the biggest ones I've seen that Vanderbilt's had in a long, long time. I mean, they're guys that are well over 330. They're 6'5", they're 6'6". They're not undersized at any position. I mean, and, you know, and a lot of it is just like, I mean, Diego Pavia, he just speaks it. He has them believing, and that's a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the games that they're winning right now is off of pure just belief. Everybody's believing that. 115 kids believe in one goal, one thing, and they all believe in it. And so far, as long as he doesn't get hurt, you know, that's the thing. That's like, you'll get South Carolina, it's 14-7, but more Sellers goes out, it's 31-7. I mean, that's the key to this whole football season is nutrition, is who has the best depth. If somebody goes down, and that guy is their backup, how good is that backup? I feel like with the portal, you're not as deep as maybe you were, you know, 2-3 years ago before all the transfer portal stuff happened.
And Tony, John makes a good
NFL.
Yeah, John makes a good point there, Tony. If you're a coach making $11 or $12 million a year and you go into a season with a subpar backup quarterback, that's your fault. Yep. You have failed if you do that. And we see it year after year after year. A couple of years ago when Florida State was on that run, they didn't have a quarterback that was ready to play behind Travis when he went down, and you saw what's happened since. Now Florida State's starting to come back. But you know what, I saw the kid trying to play quarterback for South Carolina. He was nowhere near ready for prime time, and that's just a real failing on their part. Let's talk real quick before we run out of time. Sunbelt Billy is back on the hot seat down in Florida. I told my partner Terry Quiggin this week, Tony, that she had really arrived. Paul Feinbaum on Wednesday on his show goes, they don't call him Sunbelt Billy for nothing. Terry put that label on him 2 years ago, so now she's like a Tonight Show writer for Paul Feinbaum, apparently. So, but that game, DJ Lagway's catching all the abuse, 5 interceptions, but Florida threw it 49 times. And it looked to me, I don't know what you guys thought. I thought Florida looked like the superior team athletically to LSU. They were bigger, faster. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They've got Jaden Ball, who I think is just a budding superstar. They barely gave him the ball. They make mistakes. They have substitution fouls. They have untimely holding. They lose games when you're not supposed to. And I think that all goes back on the coach. He continues to insist on being the play caller. He's not managing the game. I think he's an endangered species. We saw two coaches fired yesterday from the power conferences in week 3. How long do you guys think Sunbelt Billy's lifespan is going to be?
I think he's going to be fine after this weekend, because I think this is a really good spot for the Gators. Miami obviously woke up the Bulls of South Florida from their slumber this past week and just put up a 49 spot on them. And they're only favored by 7.5, the U, against Florida. For some reason, season. Something tells me Billy Napier will have his team ready to play. That was a tough, that was such a typical Brian Kelly type of game, 20-10, just an ugly game. You just kind of hang your hat on and go, what just happened here? They get the spread win and everything else for LSU. And of course, they're undefeated as well. But I don't know, John, what's your thoughts on Florida getting 7.5 against the Miami this weekend?
I mean, I think it's going to be bad for Florida this weekend. I think Miami's one of the top, you know, four teams in the country right now. I think they're from quarterback play, offensive line, defensive line. They got a few studs up on that defensive line, and they replaced some of the playmakers on the outside from last year to this year, have a solid running game as well. I think Miami's just going to take care of business and go in there and really just hang a lot up on Florida this week. I think Florida is a little bit demoralized.
Case Kiefer would agree with you. If you listen to one of our other shows, K4 Wins, he's been in Miami all year long. We also have the Civil War, Oregon State, Oregon. Oregon giving up 35.5, Texas Tech, Utah, a 17-16 matchup there. Utah is about 3.5. Are there any other games that you guys see in the colleges that kind of interest you that you want to get into before we wrap it up?
You know, for me, from my standpoint, I'm just starting to look at it a little bit. I'm curious to see, especially next week, where there's going to be some really interesting games. Of course, Georgia, Alabama, but Texas is going to conclude their pastry buffet. They play Sam Houston this week. Good grief. What a murderer's row after going to Ohio State. Yeah. They played three absolute jokes. And did you guys see Arch Manning booed by the Texas crowd twice in that game? And, you know, there was a time where people would have been saying, well, you know, that's just not fair. This is just a young guy and he's out there doing his best. So far in 3 years, two of them carrying a clipboard and this year starting, Mr. Manning has banked $14 million from the University of Texas. I'd be booing my ass off. He is not performing. He's not playing like he's ready to go. And once again, you got to kind of put some of that on Steve Sarkisian. You know, he's supposed to be such a quarterback whisperer. Arch Manning, let's just say what it is. He's struggling right now at Texas. They go to Florida, which might be the most desperate animal in the whole country if they don't win at Miami this week. I got to think that Arch Manning is going to find out that life at Ohio State was roses compared to what he's going to run to in the swamp.
He threw some really bad. I try not to come down on a kid like that too, but I mean, just the name Manning should keep you from throwing across your body into the end zone when you had a chance to put some points up in that ball game. He made some really bad throws. Really bad throws.
What do you think about Arch, John?
I just don't think he hasn't lived up to the hype. I mean, the only thing I can say is he didn't go in pounding his chest saying how good he was.
That's
going
right.
Into the season. It was more the media saying how good he was, everybody else pumping him up. He was the number one favorite in the Heisman, and now I think I saw somewhere he's like almost like 3,000-1 now or like that to win. It's like dropped. He's at the very bottom. So, I mean, you know, it might be some fool's goal there, but I just don't think he has it. I think he's a second too late on his throws. I mean, maybe the more he plays, he'll get it. And I mean, his legs are fine. He runs the ball pretty decent, but like, it just doesn't, maybe, and somewhat might not be, he doesn't have the playmakers on the outside either. It might not just be him. It might be Texas is just, I mean, a lot of money, a lot of talk. So of course everybody's going to say how good they are. And they got a lot of new players on this team from the team that they've had for the last 2 years.
Yeah, if I'm him and people are booing, I'm smiling. I'm killing with kindness. You know, I didn't ask for the $14 million. I mean, my agents took care of that part. I got the $14 million, and you're sitting there. I mean, I got 6 touchdowns and 3 picks. I'm throwing about 55%. He's not having a great season, but it is early in the year. They're 2-1. They're kind of right where we thought maybe they'd be. But yeah, this again, we're getting another game where he's going to be able to pad his stats, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I people just jump to conclusions. We had a couple of callers yesterday, you know, and we get a lot of Alabama people on our Sunday morning show the morning after. But Alabama fans said, well, you know, the Tide's going to have a great chance at Georgia because Georgia's got defensive problems. Well, Georgia was at Tennessee in Knoxville. You know, it just amazes me that nobody considers who you're playing.
Exactly.
And That is such a big factor because, yeah, your defense can look great. I think the whole narrative on Arch Manning might have been different if they didn't open at Ohio State. If they'd have played their first two games against these lesser teams, he'd probably be celebrated now because he has six touchdowns. Well, Arch Manning's off to a good start. But now, because he's not performing at a high level and they were a bust at Ohio State, and Tony, I know back in July when odds started coming out, you and I talked about on the starting lineup, 4 months ago, that it's ridiculous that Arch Manning is the Heisman Trophy favorite. He's barely taken a snap.
But, you know, I mean, you had to make someone a favorite. Who else would have been? I mean, it made for a good story. And, I mean, listen, if he doesn't want that type of notoriety, then he should pick the wrong sport to get in. Maybe he needs to join the bowling team because he's going to get a ton of notoriety playing at one of the biggest, best universities in all of football and being the quarterback there, particularly with a name like Manning. So he's going to get it. I don't think he's going to be doing the Monday night telecast with Eli and Peyton anytime soon. I think he will be throwing the football for a living a little bit later on just based off his name. But we'll see. But, again, against Sam Houston State, I don't think we're really going to tell a whole lot this weekend.
Yeah, so let's play some real games, Texas. Good grief.
All right, John, thank you so much for coming on with us, brother. Anytime, man, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love you guys' show. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank you.
The Kiefer and Curry Show every single week. You never know who's going to be on right here on Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.